Mud Podcast presents.
Now we'll go into the last part. This is part three of the conversation I had with Leonard Peltier on July 10th, this past summer.
So we were considered a danger to the United States. We were, of course, loved by the people. But I think this new generation, just listening to them, are more... actives. I call them active warriors. I call them warriors. I don't call them military. The government has tried to put names on us than we were. So I see them fighting hard for us. I see them. They just need a good leadership. And I'm going to try to be the spokesman for them. I'm getting too old. I can't.
It was playing. Oh, it is playing. Yeah, that's how I am. Yeah. But you know, when I was,
we can be an advocate voice for them, though.
I was giving John Trudell's eulogy at Wembley, and I start talking about this was before Standing Rock became real popular, but I had been following it because it was started by the youth, a group of young people. They were like the renegades of Eagle Butte, you know, and they came together. And so I was saying how proud I know that if John was here, how proud he'd be of these youth. And I said when I was talking that as I'm speaking at this moment, you know, they're crossing, you know, they've crossed into Iowa and they're marching to Washington D.C. And after I was done, a young kid, he looked about 15, 16, Lakota. He didn't say anything. He just put his hand out and he just kept shaking my hand. And fast forward, 3 months later when Standing Rock became real big, I was reading a story about how this Boys Academy in Kansas wanted to know about Standing Rock. So one of the youth wrote a letter to them all about it. Yeah. And so I was reading the letter and... in the letter, this young man was saying, "Well, we marched to Washington D.C." He said, "But when I got to the border of Iowa, they would not let me in because I didn't have a proper guardian with me." Mm-hmm. He goes, "So I turned around and went back to ceremony in South Dakota, and I looked at the picture of the young man, and it was a young man that came up and shook my hand in Wembley. He was a young kid that got turned away." And when he got turned away at that border of Iowa, he came down to the Sundance in Wembley, and he heard me say that. And so made me feel good that I acknowledged those young people and that one of them was there. And he came to ceremony afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so I have so much faith in, you know, the young people like you do. I can see that they're, you know, really, they're so strong in who they are and what they believe and what they're going to do. And, you know, the 30 young kids that, you know, kayaked 300 miles on the Klamath River the first time in 100 years. And I say, you know, we're going to make it. We're going to make it.
Yeah. I mean, we've got obstacles. We've got dangers. We've got it going. You got to see one thing you guys got to remember, too, about this Trump. Everybody, Trump's gonna do us good. Trump's gonna do this for that, do this for. No, you don't know your own history. What this man said about us. Okay. Remember when he had that
casino
in Atlantic City?
Mm-hmm.
And he went broke.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And who did he blame? He blamed the Native American casinos, and he said, "If I ever become president, I'll make them pay." Yeah. Quote, listen, look, it's in papers, written papers, it's written audio. That's his words. So, you know, he's not president. Might have been 50 years later or whatever, 45 years later, but... so we got to, you know, first of all, we got to know our history about all these. My thing is this: who gave them the right to tell us that we don't have a right to exist? Who? What God? No God said that. Oh, God would have put us on earth as our own people if just for another race to wipe out, to exterminate. No, God did that. That's bullshit. It didn't happen. Will never happen. I don't believe any God would do that. But, well, here they are talking about termination again, you know. I'm seeing them young people, they're getting more and more more educated in their knowing the enemy. That's what AIM was teaching. If you remember correctly, we said we've got to reinstate our culture, our religion, everything else first. And then we got to get that white man's education, because you've got to know your enemy. That's what AIM was preaching. That's what almost organization was teaching at the time.
You know, that was something that Louise Benali from Big Mountain had told me, you know, after I met her.
Weren't they awesome? I loved them old ladies. They're fucking old ladies with, Jesus Christ, 60, 70 years
old. Oh, those elders. But that was one of the things Louise told me, that she didn't learn English till she was 15. And she said, I knew that if we were to stop them, I had to know my enemy's language. I had to know how to talk to them. Mm-hmm. And so that's why she learned English at 15. And now she's...
I love them, though. Get down, Grandma.
I remember the first time four of them came up to where we are. It was the first time they'd seen the Pacific Ocean. And it was just, what an experience for them. And one of the women in our community had horses. She brought these horses, and they actually had been the wild Mustangs that had been tamed. And so, of course, the elders, you know, they wanted to get on. She's going, oh, my God, no, we can't let that old lady go on. I said, she's been riding before you were even born, you know? And, oh, my gosh, here, Violet, what was her name? And she just took off on that horse, galloping down the beach.
So I was not only shocked, but admiring to an extent of almost worship when she starts shooting back at those marshals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Come over and take her lamb.
Yeah.
Huh? I mean, come on, Grandma. They didn't know what to do, did they? What do we do? You can't go over there and arrest her.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
71 years old, 80 years old. She had come on my land again and start shooting at him.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time there, a lot of time at Big Mountain, and it was a real growing experience for me to see that and to see just the resilience, the resilience of the people and living their traditional ways.
The thing was, the people, whoever is listening to this, if you are, she stopped you. Stopped you from taking her land.
We had what we called the safe house in Flagstaff. You know, we'd go down there and stay sometimes, and every night, 10 to 7, that FBI agent, you know, unmarked car, the same one, every night at 7 o'clock would come and park and just stare at the house and everybody that was coming in and out.
I used to like giving them the finger. Walk by.
Yeah. Yeah.
New spirits.
Probably you've got to hit on me.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, it's like when I came back from Nicaragua and we flew into Miami, and they pulled me aside. They took everything I brought. You know, I brought in this. You know, things that I thought I could auction off and, you know, make some money. And, oh, my gosh. And they kept me there. They finally let me go. And then when we all went to Libya and we came back, and there was a group of us on this one plane, and when we got off the stairs, they had announced, you know, they did a stopover, and I think it was in, we flew in Zurich, and then we went to another town in Switzerland. And those, and I didn't get off the plane, you know. And the stewardess came up and she goes, "Now I want you to tell me all the people that, you know, all the people you were with, you know, who got off the plane." Mm-hmm. I said, "I don't know who got off the plane. Well, who's not here?" I said, "I don't know who was on the plane, you know, mm-hmm. like they were trying to get me to rat out." Yeah. And then before we got to New York, they announced, "Well, some people's luggage will be waiting for you at the bottom of the stairs." And we come down the stairs, and the only luggage was there was all of us that had been in Libya, you know. Yeah. And then they pulled us aside. Oh, my gosh, they held us. And one poor guy, Reggie, he was just, oh, you know, he was just a real newbie. And they put him in, oh, my God. Well, they took us and they put us in a room that was like minus 20 degrees. It was like, so you'd get real cold and freeze. And it was just, you know, they finally let us all go, but it was.
Yeah. Well, they put me in a situation where I had multiple blood transfusions. Was in a coma for 14 hours. Put me in a situation like that. Sentenced me to a sensory deprivation cell indefinitely. And I still tell them, kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when
I'm not trying to say all that. Fuck, I'm not trying to brag.
Oh, no, but you know, you survived it, yeah. You know. Yeah. Fuck them. You survived it, Leonard.
I know.
You know, and I you know, when I started my radio show, you know, and I knew they were just all, you know, these, you know, peace-loving hippies, and they had to hear the truth. And I, every week I'd get on and I would just speak what was going on. In fact, my promo said, "Hosted by Agnes, you know, who isn't afraid to say what must be said." And the station manager came one time. We've been on the air about 3 months. And he goes, "Well, you know, Agnes, this is, you know, it's good just, you know, talking about all these issues. But I think people just want to hear the myths and legends." So the next week, I devoted my show to the romanticism of the Native American culture. And that station manager had given himself, you know, his name, Deerhawk. I said, "And people who give themselves names to make them feel like they're more Native. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you." And I didn't stop for the whole hour. Boy, when that show was done, he came up to me. He had his head between his legs, man. And I haven't stopped. And every week
It got so bad when I was growing up, I swear this is the truth, that I've even heard Indians say, "I wish I was not born an Indian."
Wow, yeah.
I literally heard that. I couldn't believe it. I told them, "Well, why are you hanging around us then? Why don't you get the fuck away from us? I don't even want you. You said, made that statement, I don't even want to see you again." But I've literally heard people say that. "I wish I wasn't born in India." I'm thinking, what in the f***? Why are you here then? Why? Go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I appreciated Res Dogs. I'm sure. Have you seen Res Dogs?
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of that, when I think of the whole story, the two episodes that I had the funniest one wasn't the one with the kids. It was with all the aunties went to the health conference and ate the gummies, and you know, it was funny. And then, Dear Woman, that was.
Yeah. So, what happened here? Here's what. Grandma Tinel came down. She was about 60 something back in them days. 60 something. She spent 18 years chained to a radiator. What the government was doing back in them days, they were creating insane asylums.
Mm-hmm.
So, if an Indian didn't accept indoctrination, denial of their own government and our own culture and religion and stuff, they decided we were all crazy. So they put us in these institutions. And so Grandma Tinelk was telling about the story, but she was a good-looking girl, and they went to, they come up from the community on Pine Ridge, went one of the communities, they come in, very rare, her and her sisters, and they went to get the commodities with her dad and them. She said, "This is the first time we ever seen Pine Ridge," and we were really well. In the front of the agency was some of the Indians standing around there. These were Indians; these were not natives. And they were working with the DIA superintendent, and he, for spotters, they would spot pretty girls, and they would go and tell him, hey, so-and-so, whatever the name was, oh, so real good-looking ones over there. And so he would send them out there to go out there and tell them, the superintendent wanted to see him. And then he would make proposals on them and try for sex. And if they refuse, he sentenced them to life to the asylum. All right. So she said this guy's come up to him and told, hey, the superintendent wants to see you. And she said she was 15 or 16 then. And so they said, we don't want to go. Everybody heard what was going on. We don't want to go, she said. So they told her, you better come or they're going to come and arrest you. So they went down to her father and said, go see if they want. Go, you know, just try to get away and we'll get back to our community as fast as we can or whatever. So they go down there and he makes his proposal. And Grandma said, I told him, no, I'm not having sex with you. The hell with you. So he sentences her to life in this asylum. And she gets arrested. And so they back in them days, they were still they had Model A's and stuff, but they were still using the wagons and stuff, she said. So they go on a 2-week trip from Pine Ridge to Custer, South Dakota. You know where that's at?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So that's where the asylum was built, about 10 miles out of Custer. There's another town over there that got rich off of this asylum. I keep forgetting the name, not Sturgis. One of the little towns over there is a pretty big city now. But they got rich off of this asylum. Anyway, she said she got there. They finally got there and it took about a few days, how many days it took to get there. And in a wagon, she said, and we got there and she said, there's this big building. They had never seen a building this big and all this stuff. And they walked in that door and she said, the first thing I noticed, and I was always thought that anyway, if you get captured, you got to try to get away. This is the teachings of our people, right? And she said, I started looking around right away and I noticed there were no guards but the doors. So we went in, they made a shower, then they fed us, she says, and then they're going to assign us to a dormitory, where a bed and stuff like this. And she said, I hit the door. And I hit the door running, she said, and I took off. I ran and ran and ran. Then they sent a squad after her, and they caught her about 4 or 5 days down the road, afterward. They brought her back, and they chained her to this, because they didn't have a jail. They chained her to this radiator. So she said, I was there for about 30 days, whatever else, and they come in. I said, nobody ever seen the superintendent. From what they said from the beginning was that, superintendent got there, got out of his Model A, walked into his office, and never came out. Never came out of there. The only ones that came out of there was his secretary. And anyway, so she said, they come to me and asked me, so are you going to run again? She said, no. And so they unchained her. She went through the shower and the food, and they ate, and the change of clothes, and she said, by this time, she had made friends with a couple of the other Indian people, the other Indian women there, and she told them, make me a couple of sandwiches, right? So they made some sandwiches. They had wrapping paper back in them, so they wrapped it up in a cloth, and she said, I hit the door again, and I went running, and I ran, and I ran, and I caught up with her again. Don't think it took a little bit longer, because now she's learning how to escape, how to survive out there, and how to hide and stuff. So anyway, she said a couple times she made it all the way home, and the people hit her out in the community, and she said, but one of them drunk winos sold her for a bottle of wine. Gave her information up for that, where she, because they had a bulletin out for her, and she got busted like that. They took her back, but she spent 18 years there.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
And it got so bad there that finally the President of the United States closed it. So we know that ain't no boo. We know that. Why would he close it?
Yeah.
Right? So
it'd be real bad.
Yeah. So, okay, so fast forward, she's telling us all this story. So me and Dennis are sitting there. I said, Dennis, this would make a hell of a museum, wouldn't it? I wonder if it's still there. Well, let's go out and find out. So we go out, drive out there to Custer, and we go looking on the back roads and looking for this building, and we can't find it. So we stop off at this gas station, and this old man, at first, didn't want to give us no information. And we said, well, you know, we'll find it. You know, you either help us or you guys are going to help us find it. We'll find it. Don't worry about that. We're just going to bring 400 or 500 people here, and we'll all search this area. So he said, yeah, it's right down the road over there. Blah, blah, blah. So we drove up there. And sure enough, the grass is way high like that. And there was a gate on the door and on the fence, I mean. So we walk up there and we look, and man, here it is. The sanitarium that we heard about. Yeah, but everything was boarded up and all this, right in the grass all the way around. We said, yeah, this would make a hell of a museum. So we said, well, we got to raise the money now first. So we left. And we go to Washington. We go to California. We down Dennis, Marlon's place. So we were sitting around there like this, and we tell him, Marlon, we said, Marlon, you know, blah, blah, blah. We told him about this sanitarium. And I heard they built them. That wasn't the only place. I heard there was other reservation areas that did the same thing. So we started talking, telling them about it. We said, man, it would make a hell of a museum, but we don't have any money to do this. The government ain't going to give us any money to make a museum. They deny this even existed. Yeah. So he said, we'll help you. We'll help. That's a story that should be told. That should be, and it's still today. They don't even hardly mention it. I don't think they do. I don't see all that stuff about it. So anyway, this is what happened. Okay, so they started raising the money, and then we had to have enough money to go in there and clean up first, cut the grass, cut paint the house, you know, whatever. We had to go do all that. Then we start finding funding for staff and everything like this, and recording, getting all the files we could to show, you know, people as they come in there, you know, tourists and stuff like this. And so Marlon wants to see it, right? And the guys, so we bring them, we told them, come on down. So they come down and we go out there. Now we know where it's at because we marked the highway and everything. And we went out there and all we see was tall grass. No buildings, no nothing. They went in and destroyed everything. Yeah. Yeah. They went in and cut it, tore everything down. That was a whole year for. They must have started it right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one in Rapid City.
So we're sitting at Marlin's where we get a phone call. And it's Dr. Connie Edley. She was the head, I forget what tribe she was from. But she was talking to Dennis and us, and she said, I want to invite you over to supper tonight. Will you come over? So me and my girlfriend and Dennis go down there to have supper. We have supper. We're eating there, having supper there. And she said, the reason I called you over there, she called you over here, she said, is that, you know, I was the head of HIS, Indian Health Service. She said, I finally got promoted up there. She said, that was basically all of us, that's our goals to become, hopefully we can do something to help our people. I get into IHS, and they immediately sent me an order that I was to sterilize every Native woman I could. and men. She said, we sterilized all across America, but there were over 60,000 Native women and men. Cut the, you know, whatever they do to the men to cut, whatever. She said, over 60,000. Yeah. Can you imagine how many babies that is?
Yeah.
You imagine how many, say, 4 children per family?
Yeah.
Huh? That's a lot of people. I want that story told. I want the world to know this is what they did to us in the modern times. Yeah. That's what I want. That's my goal. See, what I want to tell the world. We don't hear nobody say nothing about it, though. Yeah. The world should know what they did to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's, you know, like that should be told. And I was talking to some people, and they said, London, they had one over there in Arizona, same kind of sanitarium over there. Well, then let's tell that story, too. You know, let's tell the world what this is what they did to us. That's my thing. Everybody, well, we should let bygones be gone. No, you just want to cover up for their crimes. That's all you want to do. You know, they want to. They don't want you to tell the world that because they want to cover it up. And here they are, talking it again. Termination of treaties, abolishing our treaties. That's the same thing. So if we forget it, we lose. We don't win. Yeah. And that's all in the record. They can't hide that. It's all in the... And if it was so bad, why did the President of the United States close them? Yeah? Just like everybody said, oh, they treated the children, their children real good. Then why did they have to make the American children's labor laws? Why did they have, if that brutality and how they treated children here did not exist, well, why did they have to make the law then? Right? Well, because it's true.
Yeah.
That's right. The women, look how they treated the women here in this country. You know, our children, especially our women, our children, enslaved our children. Used to brand them on the cheeks. And they got all those records in Europe where those kids turned 18, they tried to get themselves freed from slavery. They went to court, went everything else like there in Spain and Britain, all those. It's all in a record. So, you know, that's where we got all our information from. All those court records in Spain and so kids over there arguing that they should be freed from slavery, you know, because they abolished, Spain abolished slavery, but that took 200 years before that came in effect in Central America and America. Yeah. So, I ain't stopped a bit.
I haven't either. I always, you know, I say on the radio all the time, you know, I said, you're living on stolen land built by people who were stolen from their land.
Yeah.
And it's...
They'll probably end up killing me. I don't know. I don't give a f***. I don't care. I mean, I ain't going to feel it. You get sniped, bullet in the head or something. Ain't going to be no pain. But I ain't going to shut up. If you can kiss my ass, I am not going to shut up. I don't want it happening to my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and the future generations. I don't want it to happen. We've got to sacrifice. So, I'll sacrifice. I already showed I would do that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But, anyway, that's me in a nutshell.
Well, it's just been a real blessing and honor to be here with you, Leonard. And
well, it's just you guys keep doing what you're doing, making sure that the word gets out, make sure that people are told constantly. You know, you're going to find all kinds of obstacles, as you know. I don't need to tell you that. But just don't give up. And teach somebody to step in behind you. You know, step over, take over. And I think you got a lot of candidates out there. From what I'm hearing and seeing, there's a lot of them will step in. That's cool. That's what we're all about. That's what Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, and all of them were about. Anyway, they were preserving it for our generations to take was our turn. Now it's somebody else's turn. You know, I was hoping it was over. I was hoping I'd come out and it would be over and I have to worry about it. I have seen a lot of advances being made, though. You know, I mean, when I left there, there was not even half of what, less than half of what I see around here now. The town, downtown Belfort and stuff, all the stores we got and all this other stuff. When I left, there was only one store out there, a couple mom and pops, I think, stores.
Yeah, when I lived at Big Mountain, it was just, you know, you took the dirt roads up and, you know, you'd go to Tuba City maybe and that was it. And then I was there last fall and I hadn't been there, about 30 years, and I couldn't find the road because there were so many things that had been built up. I said, is it this road? Is it that road? But, you know, I was just amazing.
I see there were different roads. They're all completely different. Paved now.
Yeah, I said, I think it's paved up to Big Mountain now. I couldn't, you know, and I was trying to get a hold of Louise, and she had lost her phone, so it was...
I was just listening to the news the other day, or whatever, the other day they're talking about us Indians being the biggest welfare recipients. They can't even pay for what they took for us. Just... 10 cents treaty, a mountain. I seen this in my lifetime. When I went over to, I don't know what year it was, I seen this great big mountain, and there was all kinds of holes in it. And the elders were talking about this mining. They were mining. It was a copper mine, mountain. Then I went by there when I was in my 20s, and I looked down, and there was a hole in the ground would look like a puddle. They said it took 3 days to empty with super pumps. And then them trucks that were down there, them trucks are what, 12, 13, 14 feet
high? Yeah, they're huge.
And they look like little toys. I mean, that mountain must have produced trillions and trillions.
And then they don't clean it up. And
no, but they didn't. They keep saying we get everything free. Mountain paid for the next 5,000 years of anything they gave us. You know, they owe us. We don't owe them.
I had a friend that was, Carl, he's since passed on, but he was telling me, you know, when
That's
he was younger.
Mountain,
yeah.
You know, they had offered all the young men, learn how to use big equipment, you know, tractors and plows, you know, come to this training. So, of course, he went. He said, and what they found out, what they were actually making him do was take all the uranium mine tailings that were on the Navajo and just move them to one place. And so that way, you'd say, well, we had it moved, and all of them, all those young men, you know, all got cancer and didn't survive.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I've told him, I said, well, I want to take you to Spearfish Canyon. It's beautiful, you know. And then, like, 2 days later, I learned that they want to break it all, cut it all up, and put a gold mine now on Spearfish Canyon. And I'm just like...
Yeah. I know. Then they say we owe them. And then they're saying we're the biggest welfare recipients in America. Well, look at the agricultural agency. You want to see a... What they give us ain't nothing compared to what they give the agriculture system. I mean, that's the biggest welfare program in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're trillions and trillions of dollars. They get new homes every 30, 40 years whenever they want a new tractors.
Oh, we were driving through that some part in the eastern part of Montana yesterday. I'm going through some town. Yeah. And there was just nothing but these big farming companies. And he said, "What town is this?" And I said, "Plow City." I mean,
I know some of those big farmers, they get paid not to grow.
I know.
Subsidies like
what do you call that?
It's crazy.
Jesus. You know, and Trump has, you know, he hates California, so he's trying to destroy it. And after the fires last year, he released $2 billion. Well, I bumped something. I don't know what happened. It's only about, you know, another 2 or 3 minutes, and he thanks everybody. So I'm just going to leave it here. That was Leonard Peltier, and that was us speaking on July 10th on his kitchen table. The conversations, you know, that Native people have on our, you know, on the kitchen tables. You know, I know, you know, Amy came in there with her cameras and blocked out the light and did everything real professional. But, you know, it was just on my, I was on my cell phone and on his kitchen table, and so it wasn't the best quality, but we sure had a lot of fun. That was my husband David J, who was there with us. David J, one of the original DJs here at K-Mud, started the Rankin Reggae Rotation. It was originally called the Drum and Bass on Saturday nights, and reggae is still Saturday nights.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.